board from
1998.
Oh crap.
It's this beauty.
PC World Special.
Yeah, it's dreadful. But it's small and fits under the desk, but it's not plugged into the other stuff that's on this desk.
The wife says the same about my penis. Hello, welcome to the big show. Yeah, my name's Ian Rankin. We're here to discuss the week in technology. What a panel I have with me. A superb bunch. Absolutely fantastic. Joining us, top left, starting us off, Alan Hauschel. How the devil are you, buddy? Wrong person. There we
good.
Go.
I'm good, now. Thanks, Ewan.
Yeah. Mate, you've been coming on a lot. Have you fallen out badly with the missus or something?
I don't know. Has she been telling you to invite me on just to get me out of the bedroom?
We don't have you on for 18 months, and then we've had you on for the last 3 weeks.
No, skipped the week last week. But yeah, it's been 3 out of 4, I think.
You did? Right, okay. Good to have you there, mate. I'm not complaining, not in the slightest. It's always a pleasure having you in. So.
No problem. Happy to be along.
Good man. Next to him, Jeffrey, Mr. I can't do Skype properly, man.
Yeah, well, I got my Skypes sorted out, and yeah, yay Skype.
I don't have any problems with it anymore, I have to say.
Well, I have problems every now and then where it just like doesn't like a specific interface that I want to use, and I have no clue why, but I got it all sorted out. It's all good.
Be honest, you're trying to leave the latest version into 10.3, aren't you?
I can do that.
I don't think you can.
Actually, I'm running a beta right now, so that may have something to do with it.
You fooled you, do. Next to him, Ian Grant.
Hello, mate. How are you?
I'm good, buddy. It's drawing closer, mate.
Oh, yes, drawing closer. Under 100 days now, apparently.
That's not right. Have you got like a tear sheet in the kitchen? Every morning someone tears one off.
No, she's got some app thing that she's been playing around with. And one thing it happens to tell her is how many days left it is to the wedding.
Oh.
So I keep getting reminded every now and again. It's all nice.
I did a project years ago and it was this big thing about getting to this milestone, and they were tearing the sheet down, and it was in the middle of the room, and it was like this big thing. Every morning they tore it down. It was 15, it was 14, 13, 12, 11, and they got to 6 and realised they had absolutely no chance of meeting the deadline whatsoever, and it just stayed 6 for a year and a half. That was it, just left it.
Whoops.
I got 10 days work on a project that ended at, I was on it for 10 years in the end. That was a big mess it was. And last but by no means least, Chris Campion.
Good evening.
How be life in Yorkshire, mate?
It's been a really, really busy week at work this week. So I didn't walk through the door till 8:30 tonight. It's been a busy one, but looking forward to this.
Yeah, you're going to start sorted. You can't be doing that every week.
I know. I don't want to get into that habit.
Too right.
I might.
The week in tech. What's going on? We've had an email to start us off with, and it's come from Andy. And last week we were talking about the origins of the thing in this. I think we did it at the end of the podcast, or it was in the slight after show. And where it all started, and someone said, oh yeah, I remember it, brought it back to the Bagel Tech days. And someone went, what? So Andy sent an email and he said, I've got a few questions, if you'd like to answer these then we'll sort it out. And I've done these on the Mac show, so I'm sorry if this is repetition. When did Bagel Tech start? 6th of July 2008. It was a news show, and I did that because I was supposed to be doing a show with a guy called Mark Silk, who's a voice artist. We were going to do the big show first, and I got sick and tired of waiting for him to get his acting gear, so I just started doing the news show by myself, and it was 3 minutes long originally, with all the tech news on it. But yeah, 6th of July 2008, I've still got the episode, and I think we have posted it the last few years on that date, just as a kind of reminder of how much better it is there with Kyle. What was the catalyst for the inception? It was I did podcasting with a guy called Mark Silk, and we wanted to do our podcast together on tech because I used to call him up on a Sunday morning, and that was it. What's the chronological timeline for the various Bagel Tech BTN shows? So the first show was the news show, second show was the big show, and that started in December 2009, and that first panel was Carl Swagger, Sarah Gray, Andy McCaskey for the SNR podcast, and or slash dot news podcast, SDN podcast, something like that. And Carrie Holtzman, he was the one of the original people on that. It was December 2009. That was the live shows. That's when all the live shows started. That was the first video show that we ever did. And then after that, the Mac show started 5 years ago, 6 years ago. Don McAllister, Greeny, Kyle, myself, and Dr. Happy Mac were the original panellists for it. What's my favourite show episode? We talked earlier on about the Debbie McGee's Five of Spades and podcast while drinking. They were pretty good. But I was just talking to Alan before we started there. The one that's Foxtail Butt Plug, which is a VIP show, which you can listen to. That's actually an absolute corker. That is pretty cool. A few of the VIP and the Pinch shows. A few of the VIPs and the Pinches were really good ones. Least favourite show, and I said this on the Mac show, I can't remember a bad one. I come in here and I'm dull some days, you know, not ready for it because I've just been to work and I'm tired. As soon as I start doing it, I just flick up instantly. That's me, and I'm ready to go. And I never have a bad episode. I've never had any arguments where I felt really pissed off afterwards or anything like that. It really is. I do get to spend Thursday night with my mates. All the best friends I've got are around the world or miles away from me. So this is. It's great that Muller can come in now, and it's great that I can see all you guys because it is my night down the pub, if you like. Which guests from the past would you dearly love to have back on? Oh, there's an echo. Dr. Happy Mac would be great. I'd love to get Dr. Happy Mac back on the network as well. I'd love to have Mark on. I'll see if we can get Mark on because he didn't want to do video. I did want to do video, and it kind of it all ended with him just trying to put it off by not turning up, and I got pissed off with him, and I wish I hadn't. But yeah, we'll see if we can get Mark back on a big show. That'd be cool. When and how did UK2 come on board? That was 8 years ago. They gave us a serve because the cost of bandwidth was a house payment every month. I mean, you were paying £800 a month if you had a decent, successful show in podcasting at the time. So it was a lot. And where did Bagel Tech come from? So me and Mark are discussing about doing a podcast. We're trying to work out what to call it. We're sat at a service station because I'm taking him to a voiceover in Manchester for where they did Danger Mouse, actually. I said he was eating a cream cheese bagel. I said, it doesn't matter what we call it. We could call it Bagel Tech. And he went, actually, that's not bad. And that was it. There you go. So that's where all of that stuff comes from and where we all started from. Now, with UK2 for the last 8 years, they put us on a brand new server last weekend and it flies. It's absolutely brilliant. And we're having a great time. And how many more people do we have around the network now? I love this thing. It's the best thing I've ever done, I have to say. I'm really proud of BTN. I'm really proud of the fact that nearly all of you that know each other have done it through BTN. It's a really cracking community. If you want to join in some more of it, then there's a Slack room. All you've got to do is send us an email to britishtechnetwork@gmail.com and you're in the Slack room. And we're up and running. Did you all remember Mark being here last week?
Yep.
Yeah, so we got badly pissed. The tribute to Prince really wasn't very tributic, if that's a word. It was nothing like a tribute at the end because it was a bit bad trying to sing him. Mark came out for breakfast on Friday morning and he said, "Oh, mate, I didn't want to make a fuss, but here you go." And he gave me a box with a Mac Mini in it from Hoyer. So,
That's awesome!
Please, please, please support Hoyer because they really do support us. They've given us a Mac Mini, and with that, and with the, we've had a couple of great donations this week. Thanks to quite a few people, we are pushing our third Mac Mini. We are only 75 quid short of our third Mac Mini now. So please, please, please give it. And thank you to Robert who wrote in and said, "You know your graphic for five Mac Minis, Ewan. You do know it's only got four on, right?" Yeah, thanks, mate. I have noticed now. What an arse. I will be fixing awesome. That, I promise.
Well, we only need to buy four now, though, Ewan, because Matt and Hoyer kind of done it.
Yeah, that's why I did it, you see, because I knew it was happening. I need to just...
All planned.
I need to lower the red line there, but yeah. Right, the week in tech. Who's got the best story of the week? Who's going to put some in? Oh, Campion, you're quick on the fingers.
I were ready because I don't have a backup.
Oh, really? You're crapping yourself.
Yeah.
Oh, Xbox 360 console discontinued. There was a bit of a tear in my eye, I have to say, when I read that story this week.
Yeah. So, first unveiled 12th of May 2005 on MTV. And what, just what, 10 years, I think it was November it actually went into retail sales, but just over 10 years later Microsoft are now discontinuing production of it. So basically what's left on the shelf is going to sell. They're going to support it. People who are using it are going to be able to use Xbox Live and continue to play the Xbox titles that are out there. And yeah, bit of an end of an era, I think, with the 360.
That is a real shame, because it has been around for years, because they just revamped the outside of the box, didn't they, a while back, and it kept on plodding along.
Yeah, I think it's had two iterations, if I remember right. It's had the Slim and it had
the
Elite.
Slim, and then there's the box that probably we all had originally was the beige one.
Yeah, the Elite, and despite some troubles, for me, I'm not a huge gamer myself, but the 360 was, for me, the first console, other than the Sega Master System that I had, and I think at the time, okay, it was competing with the PlayStation, I think it was a PS3, but for me, it was way ahead of its time in terms of the production of the games and everything that was going on there. I was reading an article earlier on this. The last published set of sales numbers were 2013 from Microsoft, and at that point it had sold over 78 million units.
Oh, man.
And I think in total on the BBC, on the BBC article that I put in the chat room, I think, let me make sure I get this right, I think it's over 70 billion hours worth of gameplay on that platform.
Okay, that's just a multiplication, isn't it? But yeah.
Yeah, huge success.
I think the thing as well, I mean, everyone's going to, this is going to be an unending debate, and I'm going to get emails, I know I am. But I always thought that the Xbox 360 kind of kicked the arse of the PS3 at first. And when the PS3 started to slim down, and, you know, I don't know if there was a power increment in the 3 that made it better in the end. But I always thought that the Xbox was really good. The only thing that really ruined the Xbox was cheapskate crap. Like no Ethernet port, and you had to buy an extra Ethernet thing, or you had to buy an extra Wi-Fi thing.
Mm.
And it's like it came with no functionality really at the start as well. And how many people had the Red Ring of Death? I had it on two of them.
I've never had it. I've still got my original.
That's why I never bought one, because so many people got a Red Ring of Death.
Well, did you get it from Costco though? Because I bought my Elite from Costco, and 2 years later I got a Red Ring of Death. And I took it back and handed it over the counter. They never even said, they were just like, yep, no problem.
I got my original
game warranty on now.
I remember getting my original
on 360, and it went Red Ring of Death. I wandered it back to the shop. They go, oh, yeah, all right. I wandered around the back, brought another one out. There you go, sir. Best 15 quid I ever spent.
I never paid no, because the thing was, like, the beauty of Costco, they're a bit like Amazon to a certain degree. They're so big, and they spend so much money with companies that supply stuff that they basically send it back to them. And if someone quibbles, they go, okay, we won't buy any of your stuff anymore. And, oh, no, it's fine, we'll take it. And that was it. You go into Costco with stuff, and I bought a lot of consumer electronics from Costco because I know I can go back and there won't be that bullshit, it's over, out of the manufacturer's warranty. No, European two-year warranty, mate, come on. And you end up having a big argument over it, which...
I will say, yeah, I had the Red Ring of Death. Actually didn't have a warranty with a shop.
Was that from the Foxtail butt plug?
Dealt direct with Microsoft. They sent a box, packaged it up. It went off to Germany, according to the tracking. Came back, yeah, within 2 weeks. You know, no cost to me at all. It was great. The only one I thought was funny was delivery guy, when he's handing it over and taking it away, went, that's a 360, isn't it? It sounded like at that point, sort of, you know, 20% of what they were doing packages-wise was 360s going back and forth to Germany to be repaired.
Yeah.
I think we had one go back to Germany as well. We went through a few of them over the years of my lad. Many, many Xbox 360s.
Yeah, I mean, that was obviously with the original and also the Black Elite, the ones with the sort of, you know, waist curve.
Yeah, the pinched case, the one with the pinched case. We've still got one of those, slim, but that's still going strong.
And then
they
also did bring out an slightly smaller slim later on.
I think there's a lot of people had a PS3 and an Xbox 360, but...
Yeah, we do.
When we went to the next-gen consoles, I think... and I only had... I had a Red Ring of Death on two, but they were instantly changed. And the last one that I had is still running. I mean, it's incredibly reliable. And I... I think the 360 actually probably was at the root of the One being as popular as it was at the start, because people did look fondly on it. It had more design about it than the PS4, PS3 did. When the PS4 came out, I mean, that's an ugly boxy piece of crap to start with. And the PS3, you know, the Xbox 360 had a design style, and I think people dived into the One because of the fact they loved their 360 so much.
I think back, I'm probably one of the few people out there that have never had the Red Ring of Death. I think I bought mine probably in about late 2006. And I remember buying it from HMV. I got it in a bundle with Gears of War. And I was stood there looking at, did I want the 360? And back then, I think the two things that sort of spun it is, which platform were your mates on? So you could play on Xbox Live. Were they a 360 bunch or were they a PlayStation bunch? And I think for me, at that time, it was 360. I think in hindsight, yeah, I probably would have still gone for the 360. But one thing I never looked into at the time was that PlayStation and Sony clearly won the Blu-ray war. XD, yeah. That never took off. It was the whole VHS Betamax thing. And I think back then, if Xbox had have gone with Blu-ray at that point, I think the launch would have been even bigger.
What was it? HD DVD?
Oh, yes, that's right. HD DVD
and
Blu-ray were the two competing formats.
Yeah. I think if Xbox had a Blu-ray, that would probably been even bigger back in those days.
My PS3 mostly is a Blu-ray player these days. It's sat down here behind me.
And I've got friends who have gone for PlayStation because under the TV cabinet, they weren't allowed a DVD player and an Xbox, so they went for the PlayStation so they could have it all in one unit.
The PS3 was incredibly noisy as well in comparison, wasn't it?
Yes.
Out of the box, the 360 was way quieter. Definitely felt that way anyway. Might be
the newer ones are, the older ones. The white one in the pictures on the BBC article was a noisy beast.
Yeah, I always remember it being literally that the fan, yeah. when those three fans in the back kicked in. And a really disappointing thing, you almost had to have a fan cooler that plugged into one of the USB ports on the back because it got so hot.
Yeah. I don't remember mine being that noisy. I always remember the PS3 being noisy because we've still got it. And you stick a DVD or a Blu-ray in that now and it still feels like it's going to deck off.
Mm. Oh, yeah, it's still a noisy beast.
But it is the original one. A question from Horse in the chat room. Why is she wearing white gloves? Well, it's that good a console, mate.
That's pretty traditional, though, for most of the Japanese electronics launches. They do like their white gloves. I think it's a hygiene thing, like the masks they use over there a lot.
I was being facetious, but yeah. It might be the last one that they've ever made, you see. And it's valuable.
Mm-hmm.
They were always pretty crap with the disc space, weren't they? And the Xbox One was pretty crap with the disc space.
The 360 comes with an
interchangeable
disc
on the top.
Well, you had that clamp on the top.
That clip-on thing,
I bought
to the drive.
Elite, though, so mine had the thing on the top.
Which were unbelievably expensive to upgrade.
Yeah, no, you wouldn't buy it separately.
No.
That's what
I told you the idea of trying to rip it apart and bang a bigger disc in, but it's just not possible. Whereas the PS3, nicely, all you do is undo two screws. It's a SATA drive. You can just drop it straight in the slot, do a couple of screws back up, job done.
Yeah, at least with Xbox One, obviously you just plug in a USB 3 hard drive in the back and, you know, a 2 terabyte USB 3 hard drive in the back of my Xbox One. And I've got 2.5 terabytes there now.
I've got no end of drives kicking around that I've got enclosures for. I never even thought about doing that.
That's a neat idea.
Yeah. It's got to be USB 3 and it's got to be of a reasonable performance, but that's the only qualifications. And I've got a little Samsung laptop USB 3 drive that doesn't even need separate power, so it is literally one plug coming off the back of the Xbox One. All of my Xbox One games are digital. I don't own a single disc for my Xbox One.
Excellent. No, there is a bit of a weepy in my eye, even though I lost 2 to the Red Ring of Death. But they did change them pretty easily.
I think the nice thing is now, obviously, Xbox One has Xbox 360 backwards compatibility.
Yep.
I'm rediscovering and playing a lot of my 360 games on my Xbox One. You know, you can even then, you know, use
that.
Twitch and stream them if you want to, or...
Yeah, I've all my original 360 games, my nephew's playing them all at the moment on his Xbox One.
Hang on, boy, shut the front door. So, I can take all my 360 games and stick them in my Xbox One?
Well, no, there's a list that they are currently working on to expand the compatibility. I think they're up to about 150 to 200 Xbox 360 games.
You get some patches, don't you? My lad was saying about they were going to be releasing patches from games he was interested in.
If you've got the disc, you put it in the Xbox One, basically then it downloads a digital virtual PC image that they've made of it onto the Xbox One. And from then on, you just need the 360 disc to prove that you own the 360 and still have the disc.
Is that so much stupid?
But yeah,
like
you can just play them. And you even
gigabytes?
Press, the little tip is, if you press the two sort of what used to be start and select buttons on the Xbox One controller, when you're playing an Xbox 360 game, it'll even pop up the Xbox 360 mini guide. And you can also do full multiplayer and Xbox 360 chat with Xbox 360 owners because you have a console inside a console. It's a virtual machine.
Brilliant. Batwinch says, I bought an Xbox One because Alan bought an Xbox One and I could play with him.
That's so sweet.
Oh, mate.
We do, you know, we blast away in Destiny. Haven't managed to be on the same timescale for a little while, but no. It's good stuff.
I've got a tear in my eye. Moving on. You were next, Ian. You shoved the link in hyper fast. If you want to know where the links are, then all you've got to do is go to britishtechnetwork.com/chat, navigate to the 28th of April, and you will see all of the bull and tosh that has gone on in the chat room throughout the Mac Show and out throughout this one. And all the links to all the stories that we've covered in the Mac Show and in here will be in there, I promise. Ian, yours is about Google.
It's Google, and I want to try and avoid any paranoia in tinfoil hattery and just think how cool this would be. Ignore all the kind of paranoia of Big Brother and everything else, but the idea of Google running a city, having its own city, they're planning to look or buy an old, potentially economically struggling city in the US, and then enhance all the technology on that city as much as they can, and then run it. This is Alphabet rather than Google itself, the parent that Larry Page runs.
Providing.
It's called Project Sidewalk. I mean, how cool is that? And some of the stuff that would be, what wouldn't that be a cool thing? What does anyone think?
Well, that's the thing I'm just saying. Google will provide all the utter sharp-end technology stuff, providing I do what?
Have an Android phone?
You have to give it all up.
You've got to bend over.
Oh,
and say,
yeah,
here
boys! What's with the paranoia? Just ignore that cobblers for a minute. We don't care.
You know, no,
who worries about all that
anyway?
Just think how cool it would be to have a fully tech city.
You know,
Wi-Fi everywhere.
My brain just keeps taking me right to
self-driving cars. Think about that city of the future. Ignore the fact that Google's going to steal all your stuff.
Tomorrowland.
Just come on.
Yeah, Tomorrowland. There
Total
we go.
Recall.
We've done the branding for it.
What happens when Google decides that all the roads in the town were beta and they're just dropping that program?
I'll come up with a new idea and you'll go through the sky. Maglevs everywhere.
How much money do you think you'd need for that?
Well, Google have got it, haven't they? Let's face it.
As someone living in the city, you'd need no money.
Are they talking about buying an island?
No, it's something about a city here. They're looking for large swathes of the city.
Island.
In somewhere like Detroit or somewhere where there's lots of bits of it that's run down enough they could nip it up cheaply. There's probably bits of the UK you could do that with where some of the mining towns have been gutted.
I mean, it does kind of make sense in that, you know, a lot of these tech companies have been building, you know, homes of the future and stuff to showcase the tech and try and work out how it'll actually work together. Given Google's sort of size and scale, yeah, they probably do need a city to act as a road test. And well, you might as well put real live lab rats in, because that's probably realistic and better than, you know,
I've got the Truman Show running through my head.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, I know. I was thinking that on Skynet and all that kind of stuff when I was out reading this article, but I just thought it'd be nice just to think about the good side of stuff rather than us constantly worry Google are going to steal all that stuff.
I would be amazed to visit. I'm not sure I'd want to live there.
It's like Las Vegas. You want to go and have a look, but you wouldn't want to live there.
Yeah.
I was with you, Ian, for about the first 30 seconds. and then reality hit me.
I was trying to avoid reality for this one, to be fair. It was more an interest. It's an interesting mental exercise rather than being the one where I have to let reality come and smack me around the back of the head.
Let's rephrase the question. What would it be like to have a cutting edge technology city that wasn't run by the Stasi? There we go. That's what Ian meant to say.
Yes.
Is that Back to the Future 2?
Probably.
No, it's post-World War Berlin.
Mm-hmm. Now, okay, so what happens if Google buys up, say, a bunch of land in Detroit and they make their fantasy city, and it ends up turning out like some Blade Runner dystopian future?
Well, but now Detroit is like a nuclear wasteland from 8 Mile into about...
That's true.
Just short of the central city, so...
Actually, Detroit's where RoboCop takes place.
It does.
It is. It is.
Oh, dear.
Oh,
the
dear.
The future is coming true.
Oh, dear. I hadn't figured that. Yeah, good point. Ewan's had no alcohol and can't get his words out. See, I do sound like this all the time. You know, it's not nothing to do with drinking. Yeah. I don't know. I think it would be really cool, but you know that there'd be so much privacy you'd have to give up. And we're not doing a privacy show because I've had enough of that. But
I'm just trying to avoid the kind of paranoia.
Yeah, no, there's so much that you'd have to give up to be into that envelope that I just, you know, sorry, Google.
I think it's, you know, it's impressive that obviously companies are thinking kind of this big and this wide. It's slightly scary they're thinking this big and this wide. You know, I would say Google and Facebook are, you know, both of them are doing these huge sort of mega plays and really are sort of pushing, potentially putting a lot of money into what others might consider research projects. But these two companies see it as, you know, the next big thing or likely to help generate the next big thing. Yeah. And they're willing to invest.
At a cost. I don't say it. That's where I will just draw the line of pure fantasy at this being an altruistic thing. This is about servicing people. This is about getting information for people, even if it's blind data testing to see which is the best fiber, etc., etc., etc. Google is getting something from this by a long stretch, but. But yes, let's hope it doesn't turn into 1984. George Orwell was crap, wasn't he? Because he said 1984, and it's taken another 30 years.
It wasn't, though. It's so many things about that book when you read and look at what he predicted and how we saw the future, and even Aldous Huxley with Brave New World and stuff and how we saw the future. You look at those two books then and now, it was how prescient and clever those men were. Yeah. And what they saw of the future.
No, definitely. And yet, to a certain degree, we've become more stupid.
Oh, yeah, completely.
Because we've lost the basic fundamental skills.
Well, see, we're the ones that were in the bottles to put a little bit of alcohol in to make a sticker.
Yeah.
Eventually, that's a Brave New World, by the way, if you don't get the reference.
See, now I've got a 3D printer. I'm going to eventually lose the skill to go to Amazon and buy it.
That's why they invented Alexa, so you have an assistant to help you buy.
Thank you. Thank you. That's cool.
But they didn't account for Ewan's talking problems.
No, I'm fine. It's all right. Just a few words. That's all.
Okay.
I was up early this morning. I was awake at 3 o'clock. Jeff, you've put a story in about Microsoft buys DNA from Twist Bioscience.
Yeah. When I first saw the story, I was almost afraid to read it. But then I did, and I'm like, actually, this is kind of fascinating. So what they did is that they bought up all these strands of synthetic DNA so that they can start working on experiments and projects.
Explain synthetic DNA, because when you say synthetic DNA, I think it's the type that they sell at Marks and Spencer's.
Oh, I suppose it could be just tinier. Okay, so what they're doing is they're in a lab. They're able to put together all the organic elements to create DNA. So it's still organic, but since it's been manufactured, it's called synthetic DNA.
I got you.
And it's DNA that has the ability to store data like DNA does, but it doesn't have the other elements that you would need to like stick a bunch of these together and all of a sudden you have a new animal.
Right.
So yeah, so they're looking at this for long-term mass data storage. And they're saying that these DNA strands should last between 1,000 years and 10,000 years, just without doing anything to them.
AKA longer than Microsoft.
Longer than Microsoft. So yeah, so you'd have a way to store data, massive amounts of data, in a stunningly small space for extended periods of time, and you wouldn't need to worry about running out of space. You wouldn't need to worry about if your data is going to get destroyed, unless the DNA itself is physically destroyed. And this looks really cool. And the idea of having computers or picture being able to carry a mobile phone in your pocket that has like 5 terabytes of storage.
Do anyone remember Johnny Mnemonic?
Mnemonic. Oh, yes.
I loved that film. I thought it was a quality film, but it was all complete, utter fantasy and bollocks.
It's based vaguely on the William Gibson books.
Right. Thanks, mate.
Yes.
The Neuromancer.
I'm not taking the piss. I'm dyslexic, so I don't read a lot of books, it has to be said. But that sounds a little bit like this. Is this, are we equally wildly complete and utter bollocks, or is this is the move towards the Johnny Mnemonic hacking your brain, carrying information internationally, cyber criminal?
I don't think they're looking at this as a hacking your brain sort of thing, just as the future of general data storage.
I just don't get how the DNA is DNA, right?
DNA is readable forever. It's a brilliant idea when you think about it. It's
evolution has spent a huge amount of time going and making a very efficient, redundant data storage system in very small space. Why not, take advantage of evolution? So you're encoding digital data, and actually, the DNA is 4-bit, isn't it? Sort of, it's got 4 key chemicals, so. Mm-hmm. Effectively, it's got double binary anyway. And then, the 2 strands are generally designed to be able to split and create duplicates, plus, enough room for checksums, incredibly compact. Yeah, I mean, you're not going to be using this as read and write memory. I think this is literally, potentially archive. So you're probably just talking, this is only read-only memory, because the stuff to make the molecules and then read them would probably be, isn't going to be miniaturized anytime soon, I would suggest. But yeah, it seems...
My guess is that, just based on what it looks like they're doing, my guess is that short term, yes, this would be like a very powerful archival data storage option. But long term, they want to go read-write with this DNA. Which actually now, Ewan, all of a sudden I am getting a little freaked out, because if you can read and write to the synthetic DNA that's designed just for data storage, then it's not a big leap to go to read and write for actual DNA in living organisms. That would be interesting and actually scary at the same time.
Maybe it's because I couldn't read the story because it had an autoplay video on it, but I kind of feel like I'm as drunk as I was last week at this point. And I'm not. And I'm not even close. Someone's going to write to my DNA.
Mm-hmm. No, synthetic DNA they're going to write to and use it.
It's a genius idea.
I suppose they could eventually write to your DNA. It becomes then one of the perfect storage mediums, because we'll always be able to read it. It's not like the last little format of tape drive that no one's got a drive that can read, and you go back 10 years and you think, oh, I need these files back for this case, and you look at this thing and I can't get data off that, I've been there. If that's stored in a medium that we can easily get, as long as we can interpret that DNA from the substrate we've stored it on, brilliant. Genius idea. I like that very much.
I can just see one night, I go to sleep, someone plugs me in, I wake up in the morning, I can do kung fu, and I'm smuggling the plans for a nuclear power station up me bum.
You say that like it's a bad thing.
Yeah, certainly you do say that's like a bad thing. Again, I love the idea. You plug yourself. Again, we're going back to Johnny Monick and William Gibson's Neuromancer ideas of plug yourself into the net, as it was then, and you'd have all the things downloaded. I mean, my Matrix picks up on ideas from that as well. It's fantastic. I like the idea, I'll be honest.
And I'm sat here thinking, so post-mortems in future, that means, the body's on the slab, somebody comes in, plugs it in, and rather than bother with everything else from the post-mortem, just read what's coming straight out of the brain in terms of what happened in the final steps of that person.
Stuff needing a thumbprint.
Yeah.
Oh, why?
Plug it in, see and hear everything.
There's a nice point made in that article where they're saying, consider the DNA of a dinosaur. We found that recently. And that's basically it. Where you gone?
No, I was just thinking about, I was thinking of proctology, of course.
Of course.
Your thumbprint reader's now on the inside. To get the data out during your post-mortem.
Yep.
Oh dear.
Yeah.
Muller's put in the chat room, if Ewan was pissed last week, he'd have got this first time. Now he's got no alcohol. He can't manage to operate without alcohol. Might be true. Close enough. That just seems like a massive leak for me. That's like, are we... was that a story like that's happening next week, or is that a story like it's 500 years down the line?
Not 500 years down the line, but several years down the line.
Well, do bear in mind Microsoft are doing it.
Oh, right.
Bill Gates, they got 131 million from investors, including people from the Melinda and Bill Gates Foundation.
Has anyone read a book? I'm trying to remember the title of it. It was written by a guy called McLaren. And basically this lad had worked out, he'd created, if you remember Blake 7, do you remember the Oric, the box in Blake 7, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So he created this Oric box type box, and he was dying from an incurable cancer, and he downloaded himself at the point of his death into this box called Oric, and that thing became and went and got a load of venture capital. And the whole book goes along, and eventually he has to die, but this box is him. It's his entire personality. Absolutely everything in there is about him. He's dealt with. And there's the Daniel Suarez book as well, where the game developer downloads himself into the net.
Damon,
yeah, which has had a sequel apparently, which I haven't read.
I haven't read the sequel either.
But I can't remember the book by McLaren. It was a good book. It was before Damon. It was a long time before Damon. But it was. It was definitely a bloke called McLaren. There we go. I'll have a look on Amazon Books in a bit. But that was very kind of like this. And the interface of at what point does a person stop being a person? And if you get into the stage of writing codes to DNA, and then it starts to think about, well, does that DNA stop being synthetic and start being real? That'd be quite an interesting one. I feel a movie coming on. Right there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's a script in the making.
Is that thing with Blake 7? Not Blake 7, sorry. Johnny Depp in recently where he downloaded himself into a computer.
Oh, yeah, Transcendent.
Is that yes, that's the one.
Good film, like that.
I haven't seen that one.
The girl that's his wife in that's excellent. She's a lovely actress. She's really, really good. That was a great film. I really enjoyed that. And that's very similar to this kind of, this book by McLaren. I'll find it. Can't remember his name. I'll sort it. Alan, Surface Phone and huge Windows 10 mobile Redstone 2 update.
Yeah, this is, I thought this was a good article that pulled together a lot of stuff. There's been a number of new sort of leaks from sources inside Microsoft. Obviously, there's been a lot of news in the sort of popular press and in the tech press of, the death of Windows Phone. And so I just thought it was useful sort of setting out. Microsoft tends to take a longer term view over things. Now, obviously, the downside is that the world doesn't necessarily take a long term view of things. So we'll wait and see what happens by the time Microsoft's ready. But it's become clear that basically the threshold, sorry, the Redstone 2 release, which is scheduled for Easter, after Redstone 1 release, which is Windows anniversary coming in July this year, Windows 10 anniversary in July this year, is supposedly very much focused on mobile. And also one of the reasons that Redstone 2 is due for April is that that's due to sort of coincide with just being after Intel's next major chip generation comes out. So one of the rumors is that the Microsoft Surface phone, you know, the first Microsoft Surface branded phone as opposed to Lumia branded phone, will come out in April 2017, and it will be running probably an Intel CPU, and it will be focused on security and productivity. So I think it will be a, you know, business and core enthusiast focused phone. Don't necessarily expect them to be trying to compete in the popular market with Apple and Android, because that's probably not very sensible to go head to head with those, is it, at this point? But yeah, and there's lots of things in terms of, obviously, if it is an Intel chipset, by then that means you may also be able to run your Win32 software on it as well. And obviously it does give a year for all of the new Windows 10 Universal apps to come out and be able to run on both Continuum, you know, broadcasted big desktop screens, as well as run on the phone. So there's a lot going on, but there is an interesting one, obviously, in who knows where Android and iOS will have got to by April next year. On the other hand, we are more in an evolution than a revolution sort of phase at the moment in smartphones. So there's an opportunity for disruption. I think most people will say, April next year is a long time in mobile. I think Microsoft will say that, well, they feel, at least in America, they haven't got any momentum with Windows Phone, Windows 10 Mobile at the moment, so they're not losing momentum. But I do worry about what's going to happen to Europe, where, you know, I think they have, you know, they do have over 10% market share in many European markets. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what's going to happen to both the enthusiasts, but also just the normal people who walk into a shop and come out with a Windows Phone.
I think for me, Alan, on this one, and I've heard you and I've heard a few other people talk about Windows Phone here, and I've never used one myself, but I think you're right in terms of the sort of the popular handset market. They've got a fair bit of catching up to do. And I think when as Microsoft come out of the blocks on this one, I think they've really got to hit the market with something special, whether that's a really key feature or whether it's a really low price point to attract people onto the market, because I think they've an awful lot of battling to do. And I think you're right. April's a long way away in mobile terms. I think both Apple and probably the big players like Samsung are obviously pushing ahead to get as much out of the way as far ahead as they possibly can, particularly in the security market because of recent news. So I think Windows have got to do something special really early on to grab some attention and see where it takes them from there. I want them to do well. I want them to push more competition into the marketplace, because that's got to force people like Samsung and Apple to get even more innovative in the stuff that they're going to be bringing out. But I think at the moment, I think they're way behind, and I'm not quite sure how they're going to get that real grip to be able to elevate themselves forward.
I mean, I've been playing around with the Windows 10 betas on mobile, and they are, it's very nice. It seems they're going for this idea of a unified Go base. The same thing that runs on your Windows 10 desktop will run on your phone. It's as simple as that. The universal apps are running everywhere. It's brilliant, to be honest. If they can get it working well, it'll be good. The Windows 10 device I've been playing around with, battery life's a bit ropey, but it's a beta. But it is neat. It seems it seems an evolution on from the version 8 that we saw before. hopefully it's going to do. I like to think they're going to do well, to be fair, because they do seem to be working at it, actually trying to get something that people are going to want to use. And certainly in the kind of the non sort of what's the word on the but what Kelly always called the muggle kind of buyer, there's a place for Windows Phone. They don't really care. Has he got a nice screen? Has he got a camera? Can I get on the internet with it? Can it navigate me somewhere? Can I send a message with this popular messaging app? They're all on there for the most part. Why not? And it's cheap. You can pick a Windows Phone up now, I think, for about 50 quid, brand new. Not tied to a carrier, I'm sure.
I mean, we've sung the praises of Windows phones for quite a long time on this podcast, and I think they still have a great interface, and it's very slick and very efficient. Mm-hmm. Runs at 60 frames a second, and it's smooth. The only thing that bothers me, Alan, is you know, there's a lot of measures been announced over Windows 10 in the last sort of 3 months, and I'm just wondering how many of those are desperate measures and how many of those are development measures, genuine development measures, and whether is there a long-term investment in the Windows platform, or is this, are we getting ready to pull out of the Windows Phone platform and actually in another 12 months we could be talking and remembering Windows Phone?
The amount of development I see going on, I doubt it.
Yeah,
just because of the parallel streams. I'm on the insider beta preview of Windows 10, and every time I get my update, they're also talking about an update for the phone.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's ironic that the popular press is talking about, you know, the death of Windows Phone and Windows, and you know, obviously officially Windows 10 Mobile. But what's actually happening is Microsoft has gone, right, well, you know, for the last, what we did is, well, we let Nokia, who obviously knew how to make handsets and sell handsets, they had a big run and they flooded the market with phones and models in all sorts of categories. And then we've been trying for the last 2 years mostly to do the low-cost handsets, and we've had some great success in some countries and not others. Everyone keeps saying it's fabulous apart from the app gap. So now that the Windows 10 mobile team is actually part of the Windows 10 desktop team, and it's just the Windows 10 team, yeah, Windows 10 mobile has actually had 11 updates, OS updates, in just 5 months. And at the moment, it's looking like it will have another 20 more this year. So it is on an aggressive update cycle now, because it is basically picking up things from the desktop side. Now, up until July, August, I think the Windows team is focused on delivering the Windows 10 desktop anniversary edition.
Yeah.
And then the mobile is basically inheriting improvements as they get built for the desktop side. But the new information is all that, you know, for April next year, which probably means they will start changing their focus in sort of September, they will actually be paying most attention to and doing a lot of new features for mobile, which they will then, you know, also a number of those features will just turn up in the desktop side. And obviously desktop Windows is a lot more mobile than it ever has been across tablets, laptops, etc. So mobile features are of benefit to full PCs, aren't they? A lot of them.
Is there a key factor here, though, that Microsoft have really got to do something for the developers? That they need to build the App Store. They've got to incentivize the developers to not just build for iOS and for Android. Incentivize them to build for Windows Phone as a platform. And if the apps are there, people will come. You know, while the platforms now, while the apps aren't there in the background, I know from a, you can use all the web versions within the Windows mobile browser, but people are using apps now.
I mean, most of the apps are there. I mean, the big things you can think of, there's more or less an app for it.
Microsoft has actually been trying the pay developers to build apps for the last 2 years, and what happened was a lot of the times they paid the developers to make the app, and then the developers never actually released updates or kept their apps up to date like they did the future versions of the Android and Apple.
because
of they've switched tack and they've gone, what developers will build apps if they know that there's a decent user marketplace. So if we do Windows Universal Apps and we can say, you know, build your app for Windows 10 and it will run on, currently I think it's 270 million is the number they give out, devices, then, you know, and it's just one click and a bit of responsive screen design to make it also work on Windows Phone. That's one of their tactics. The other one to fill the app gap is obviously they're doing the iOS. They killed the Android app bridge, but the iOS app bridge is still coming and is near finished, so that developers will actually be able to easily port their Apple iOS app to run on Windows 10 mobile.
I'm curious to see how that works, because the porting options that I've seen in the past, just for any platform going back and forth with iOS, have been disappointing, because what developers had to do to make their apps port properly was to just cut out all the features that they would normally use on the iPhone that are iOS specific. And and so they end up with these very anemic applications.
Now, apparently what Microsoft have done is they have provided replacement Microsoft named APIs that work exactly the same as the iOS ones. So you do have to rename what you're pointing at, but you don't have to, but it should, the inputs and the outputs should be the same as if you were talking to the Apple services for the apps.
Oh, that's much better.
So there's been a lot of work there. They did go and also have this Android app bridge, but that one relied on emulation, and apparently they weren't. There's two rumors. One is that it didn't work well enough in terms of, you know, run fast enough and stably enough. The other rumor is it worked too well, and actually there was no inducement for developers to then actually put any work or consider making a Windows app once they found that there was enough people getting their app. So
that's kind of funny.
Yeah. So the Android one, the Android bridge that was announced, has been killed. They also have the other one, is there's another bridge, which is you'll be able to do a wrapper. This has been released for open preview now, which will take a Win32 app, you know, like Photoshop, and will wrap it up so that it can be delivered through the Windows Store. So you will be able to get all of the, I can't remember how many, you know, Windows Win32, you know, traditional apps, programs there are in the world, but they will start loading them into the store. So the Windows Store will obviously become a much more mature marketplace, not just full of little apps.
Is the Wordflow app for iOS, is that a ported app? Because that's out today, and it's not available in the UK, so I can't test it. But it looks,
wait, which app?
Wordflow for
the
iOS.
The Microsoft keyboard for iOS.
Yeah. From what I understand, that was not ported. They started from
just
scratch.
A keyboard build. Because it's only for iOS, though. It's not...
No, it's on Android as well.
That's what I'm saying.
And it is using all of the stuff that they learned and first developed on Windows Phone.
So looks interesting. I'm really keen to try that when it comes out of here.
I'm desperate to try it because it makes so much sense, because I type with one thumb predominantly. Yep. So.
Oh, I say Wordflow. Oh, I like that. The keyboard's beautiful. That's great. Cool. If it's anything like the Windows Phone built-in one.
It's basically does the sensible thing of radiusing the keyboard from the predominant thumb that you would use to type one-handed.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And it's just like, why has that taken since 2007 to come up with that idea? Because that's so simple.
The simplest of the best, and that there is a perfect example of it.
Muller says he types with his forehead.
You just need a big screen for small words.
There's no one surprised at that, mate. Yeah, no. I really hope that Windows has got a bright future as a phone platform, and I really hope they go back to investing in the camera again, because they seem to have walked away a little bit from that. You know, all the stuff that they did with the PureView in the 1020, even though the PureView in the last, is it the 10?
The 950.
950 is good. I still feel like it's gone backwards a little bit. It's not.
I think the issue is that for people who wanted almost, you know, a DSLR in their smartphone, the 1020 was the sort of pinnacle. But it was slow picture to picture. And I think they've decided, you know, the vast majority of people actually care more about good to great quality, but fast, versus, you know, the 41 megapixel, absolutely stunning.
See, I love the 1020, and I still would say that I love the 1020, but I got a good quality picture, okay, from the iPhone 6S, and I got the 240 frames a second video, which was fantastic, even though it was 720p, and I got 60 frames a second video at 1080. And that was useful out on site as well. And I've been gagging for Windows Phone to do at least something equal, because then I could go back to it. And my heart, as an OS, my heart wants to be in Windows, most definitely.
But
it's not doing enough to pull me away.
The 950 and I think the 930 recently on Windows 10 Mobile have gained slow-mo options, but I don't know what resolution and frame rate they're going up to.
But there's the point. I don't know what, you know, and that's my point, is that there's no perception of for me that they have done anything that makes me want to go back yet. They need to sell that to me. I found out about the 1020. The 20 was sold to me, whereas I think the 950 is okay, if you want it, see it, fellas. You know.
Yeah. No, I think the problem is, you know, Microsoft, I think the good news is they're listening. They know that the Achilles heel of Windows Phone, Windows 10 Mobile, is the perception and reality of lack of apps.
Yeah.
And they are going, right, okay, well, we've got iOS Bridge coming. We've got Windows 10 Universal Apps coming. Let's take this year to retrench. And then we can come out the doors, hopefully, you know, storming in Easter 2017 with, you know, right, we've gained and inherited all these Windows 10 apps from desktop that rescale, you know, just responsive design down onto the phone screen. We've got the Continuum to do, you know, broadcasting and basically dual monitor, wireless or wired, to bigger screens. We've got, you know, we'll have the new generation hardware. I do expect them to still make a big fuss and focus on camera, because it is something that you know, most people care about, and I think they know it was a differentiator, and their enthusiast market cares about the camera. But yeah, it does meantime leave, you know, a big gap if you are a normal person looking for a phone. I mean, my current plan is I love my 1020. But my 1020, unfortunately, is not going to get the Redstone releases of Windows 10 Mobile. It's stuck on the original Threshold branch. So I am probably going to consider getting a cheap, so sort of a second-hand Grade A Lumia 930 for £120 off, you know, unlocked. And then that'll keep me going till Easter. But, you know... it's difficult to justify spending, you know, 350 to 450 for the 950 to 950 XL, even though that's not a very high price for a, you know, for a flagship unlocked handset, is it, really? No. Not compared to a lot of them.
No, it's nothing in terms of global cost. No.
You know, if you think that you're gonna want the new hotness come April, then, you know, the 930 is a very cost-effective stopgap, I would say. The 930, sorry, would be a very cost-effective stopgap. But if you want the best, you've got the 950. Or the other interesting one is basically the other reason Microsoft's taking a step back hardware-wise this year is Microsoft would like Windows 10 Mobile to be like the PC market, with third-party manufacturers doing most of the hardware and then them just having the premium Surface line. So interestingly, there have been more third-party Windows 10 mobile handsets released and announced in the last 6 months than there were in the previous 2 years of Windows Phone 8. So there's been 7 Windows 10 mobile handset releases in Japan alone. There's the massive Hewlett-Packard Elite X3, which is an absolutely amazing top-end hardware. And there's also the rather funny-named Acer Jade Primo is coming along.
What but, the Windows phone market doesn't need is more models.
Well, they do now. They do if, you know, there's no more Lumias coming until Easter.
Yeah, it needs a it needs a range of models, though, but those models have got to hit specific market groups and stick to 4. Stick to 3. There are 3 options that you can buy that fulfill the criteria for those 4 band markets. It doesn't need a different model every week that I can't track.
Well, Microsoft have said they are just going to do 3 models. They've said they will do, their plan is on a yearly basis, they will release, they will release, well, 1 or 2, depending on whether you count, you know, potentially different screen sizes, but the same model, low-end handset, 1 value business handset, and 1 flagship handset going forward. So they have also acknowledged that there were too many models coming out in the end of the Nokia Lumia era, and nobody could keep track. So, you know, at the moment, there is the 950, the 550, and the 650. That's your recent hardware launches. And at the moment, there's no rumors of anything else till Easter, which is possibly too big a gap. But in the meantime, there are, quite a lot of other third parties releasing new handsets, some of them very good price. I mean, the blue BLU handsets, you can pick them up with good hardware specs off Amazon and stuff.
I'm just looking at those now.
And a lot of them are dual SIM, so you know they're great if you want to put a second SIM in when you're in Europe to get your cheap data, or you know you just want to do that sort of thing.
Want one for your mum? This looks ideal.
I've got the 520 for my parents because I can strip the home screen down to the very bare basics and they can't get it wrong.
Yeah, you were telling me about that, and that's the exact reason why I was going to do the same.
And my mom rings up and goes, that's smart. It's got all these things on the screen. See the window symbol at the bottom? Yeah, press that. Oh, it's back. Yeah, there we go, Mom. See you soon. Bye. And it is effortless support. This podcast and all the others is brought to you by UK2. They are fantastic. We love them to bits. They've given us a new server this weekend. And if you tried to download a podcast on Saturday morning, you'd be like, oh, I can't get one. That's because they were transferring the server over. We've gone to brand new hardware. They've upped our upload limits. We've got an extra terabyte of storage now. It is slick as snot and fast as hell. It is superb. And they did it at the weekend because they've been saying, oh, you know, the old stuff we've got for you is getting a bit creaky, groaning. We need to change over. When's it convenient? And when you do a podcast, it's never convenient to move over stuff. So they just did it. 3 hours later, we're on this brand new slick as snot server that's running absolutely brilliantly. We've got no permissions errors. We've got no loss of data. Absolutely nothing. Well done, UK2. Absolutely superb. Love you to bits. And please, please, please support them because they are an incredible part of BTN. We wouldn't be able to do what we do without them. We've got a fantastic service from them and they keep us running, plain and simple. So if you want anything, britishtechnetwork.com/sponsors and you'll get the offer codes. And if you want to just sign into your account, britishtechnetwork.com/UK2, then sign into your account as normal in cPanel and have a great time. And whatever you're doing, stop what it is right now and say thanks to Hoya and thanks to UK2 because with people like that, it's what keeps us afloat. Because we don't make anything. It's not for profit. We just do it for the fun of it. Right. Cool things, chaps. Start us off. Alan. Hello, Alan.
He's on mute.
I think his cool thing is a mute switch for his microphone.
So my cool thing is a Microsoft Xbox One stereo headset. It's not small, I will say. But the actual thing is beautifully engineered. Combination of matte and glossy black sort of thing. There's the mic is just nicely slots into the headband, and it's got a little bit of magnet click to it. Comes round, does go in and out as well as up and down. I have to say, £35 with Prime, Ewan, on Amazon.
No, oh, shush.
It also comes with this adapter here that plugs into the bottom of your Xbox. So this actually gives your old controllers a 3.5mm headphone jack.
Right.
This adapter is actually £20 on its own. So the headphones with the adapter is £35. What is nice is obviously you've got a mute switch, you've got volume up and down on the buttons here, but you've also got these other two buttons which allows you to change the relative volume of the game sound versus the party chat sound. So you can have the game sound really quiet and the chat sound really loud. And it's actually, I have to say, these headphones, they do really good for gaming. They're quite bass heavy, which obviously is great for video games, but they also give really clear audio. And they are, I mean, they're huge, but they are full over the ear. So, you know, they're very comfortable to wear for extended periods. Block out very nice soft pads. They're excellent. So, you know, it means that when I'm playing upstairs on the bedroom Xbox at night, I can get some decent sneaky late night gaming in and doesn't disturb Helen while she's trying to sleep.
Nice.
And yeah, £35
getting
only.
Some sneaky gaming in while the wife's sleeping, yes.
Well, she says she, you
I
know,
love
she
it
wants
when you
my
talk
company
code
in
like
the bedroom
that.
And stuff, but then when she falls asleep, well, you know, that's fine. Xbox turns on, and she's not disturbed by the gunfire.
Because that's what it
sounds like. You're in America.
Well, that's what it's like living in South Wales.
That way I'd have to put the headphones on her, not on me.
Excellent. Jeffrey, what have you got for us, sir?
I have something that's amazingly cool, and luckily, Ewan, it's not going to cost you anything, because you can't actually buy this. There's this guy that decided the Lego Imperial Star Destroyer kit, which it's a really cool Lego kit, just wasn't quite big enough or accurate enough for him. So he designed his own that is, it's like over a meter long, and there's so many Lego bricks in it that it weighs about 70 pounds. What? And you can actually pull sections off from the top, and he built an interior, which of course is not to scale to actual Star Wars stuff, but it's a clever scale that works well for minifigures. So you have control rooms and a hangar deck and engineering, and this thing is just crazy. It is just so cool.
That's kinds of awesome.
He needs to get a life.
And in the photos, I like how he put the Lego kit, which is pretty big in and of itself, beside his, so that you could get a sense of scale.
How has he done that, Jeff? Is that all with standard Lego bricks, or has he made some of those components?
Everything is standard. So no custom bricks anywhere on this thing. He said the only thing that is not standard Lego, he did run a string of LED lights inside so that you could turn off the room lights and see light coming off of it.
Because you have to do that.
Because you have to do that. Yes.
I mean, Muller's taking the Mickey out of me, saying, "Oh, you imprinted it." But there is, if you type Lego into Thingiverse and that kind of place where you get STL files for your digital printer, it is just lousy with all of them. There are so many things you can print that people have drawn. Special bricks for making curved staircases and all sorts. There's tons of stuff.
Oh, I need to... Crap. Thanks, Ewan. Now I need to get a 3D printer.
Well, you go to Amazon and just look at Wanhao printers and Wanhao printers, Wanhao printers, and they're £330 at the moment for one. And they the
same, spell it again. Wanhow. Is that right?
Wanhao.
Wanhow.
No. Wanhao.
Yeah, I had it right. I just said it wrong.
Okay. That's all that matters then.
I don't think you can get them in the United States.
Yeah, you can, because Doc's got the one that I've got. They might be all somewhat different, but just type in 3D printer into Amazon. There'll be one for about $450. And you buy the filament stuff, and the filament stuff's £15 for a kilo of it. And I've been printing my arse off for the last 3 weeks, since I got it, or 2 weeks. And I'm not even a quarter of the way down on any of the filament reels I bought. They last forever.
Oh, wow.
You've got to bear in mind, it only squirts out half a millimetre of plastic thread when it builds it up. And also, it makes a honeycomb in the centre of solid parts, so nothing's actually solid. It's all skin with a mesh on the inside. So
Jeff, so what's happened here is you brought a pick that wasn't going to cost you anything, but it's cost $450.
Well, that's karma right there.
Pretty much.
And I just did something I should have never done in my entire life, look for 3D printers on Amazon.
No, that link from Horse there in the chat room takes you to the .com site where you can buy it. There you go. That's the one that I have. That's the exact one that I have, the Wanhao i3 duplicator. And it's frustrating as hell, I'm not going to lie to you. But I've stuck with it, and now I've pretty much got... But that said, I started a 42-hour print before the Mac show, just as a, like, okay, I think I've cracked it now, so I'm going to start the 42, and I've just gone and picked up a pile of bundled mesh in the office, so, the other office. So I'll be doing something different. But no, that's it. It's a great printer. It really is good. I like it. You've got to take the time to bother to set the bed properly, and that's where you have to move the thing to all four corners, backwards and forwards, and put a piece of paper in and get it exactly right so it squishes out a semi-flattened sausage of PLA. Mm-hmm. Once you do that and you get the temperatures right, then I went against the book as well, because it says you should print PLA at 210 to 220, but nowhere near as high as 240. But what I found is if you make a colder bed and a hotter filament, it sticks far more easily. So sticking for once you crack first layer, you're laughing, you're off and running. But getting first layer can take you a week. There you go.
All right, good to know.
The Book of Ewan. Go get through. Make the number of Lego parts you can make. I've been making Ellis Lego blasters, and here you go. That's a little glow-in-the-dark medieval sword that's scaled perfectly for Lego.
That is just so awesome.
You can't see it because but in between those the pommel there, in between the guards on the pommel, there is a gap that is printed. The gap.
Wow.
And it is, there you go, you can just see it, look there. There is a clean gap through all of that. It's super.
That's really impressive.
It is. It's awesome. When it gets it right, it gets it really right. When it gets it wrong, holy crap. It's like a bird's nest. Good pick, mate. Ian, what have you got for us, mate?
I've got a couple of things. Now I've been 10 and 12-year-olds in the house, I get to find out what's cool, because let's face it, I'm 44, I don't know what's cool. And this, it's called Slitherio, is cool. It's a Dart Flash game, and you can also get it on your phone as well. It's an iOS app. And you basically make your little snake dot around and pick up little energy balls. And if you go faster than another snake, you kill it, and then you can absorb its energy. And basically the aim of the game is to make your little snake as long as you can possibly make it by keep gathering up the little energy balls. Dead simple, silly little game.
It's a Agario meets Nokia snake game.
Yes. Exactly. Like Agario.
And it's frigging hard to control. The thing's mental.
It
doesn't move, and then it just goes
ballistic. All these things is fine, but if you're 10 or 12 years old, this is cool. Just so you know what's
cool. You know, it's actually easier to play until you die, with a stylus.
That's probably true, though.
Yeah, I'm doing it with my Wacom tablet right now. And, yeah, it's actually a lot easier.
Yeah, it's an amusing little thing just to muck about with. Also, my other pick today for the older people amongst the in the crew is, or anybody really, is Dan Carlin's Hardcore Histories podcast series. Don't know if anyone's listened to any of these, but these are excellent. They're not light listening. They're normally sort of 2 to 4 hour long chunks, but he covers some amazing topics. And it's not just a case of him repeating what everybody's written. He reads everything about a particular topic that he can find and then kind of summarizes it in terms of sort of what different people's opinion are and analyzes it. And they're absolutely superb. He did Blueprint for Armageddon, which is an excellent series on the First World War, and really did pass a couple of long drives I had to do recently. And that's a guy called Dan Carlin. He's in the iTunes app store. He's in the iTunes podcast store, and you can get his RSS feeds if you've got any kind of podcatcher. But that's Dan Carlin's Hardcore History.
Sorry, I was playing. Sorry, mate.
Oh, God, have I got you on? Can we do that again, then? Jesus Christ.
It's a podcast, dude. They don't have to worry.
Podcast. Dan Carlin's Hardcore History.
Oh,
I've
just killed a green thing. I've just run straight through a green thing and killed it.
Have you? Well done. Yeah. That's the idea.
Oh, I've clicked on the wrong window now. I'm going to die.
But yes, that's the cool thing if you're 12.
Super. Thank you, mate. Camps, what have you got for us, mate?
So for me, Ian goes with something fairly serious with the Hardcore Histories. I'm going to be stupid. So if nobody's watched Silicon Valley, so it's on HBO over in the US. We in the UK have had it on Sky Atlantic. Season 1 and 2 are available on Sky box sets if you're a Sky subscriber. It's definitely available in the iTunes store. I'm fairly sure it'll be available on Amazon Video as well. But the reason I'm bringing this up, although it's... So season 3 started in the US this week. Season 3 airs in the UK, I think it's around about the 12th of May. So if you're in the UK and you haven't watched it yet and you fancy this, you've kind of got time to squeeze season 1 and 2 in before season 3 airs. So this is it's a bit of a comedy take on a Silicon Valley startup, a developer who develops an algorithm for compression as part of a music app that fails. It goes through the whole rigmarole of looking for investment. It's a little bit stupid, but it's funny. It kind of in a way makes me think a little bit a bit like what Silicon Valley's probably like in some respects, but exaggerated somewhat. So it's a comedy. It's very, very light watch. Obviously it's tech based, and if you've not watched it and fancy a laugh, give it a go.
Excellent, mate. Good on you. My cool thing, I think, is going to be my printer, because I do love it. This week I've absolutely nailed it in terms of getting stuff right and printing it properly. And it's £333 on the Amazon web store, on the Amazon store. It's just unbelievable. And the PLA's, the filament for it is really, really cheap. You'll hardly use any of it. So there you go. A Wanhao i3 printer on the Amazon store. I'll put the link in the chat room and go buy it, because it's well worth the money. No question. Dirt cheap. I've printed loads of stuff. One-handed bottle openers, because that's really useful, in luminous plastic. And a Death Star. There you go. And I made my daughter's night the other night because I took her home a rabbit disguise. Where can we get a hold of you, Alan?
Yeah, you can get a hold of me on Twitter at Digital Amoeba. And if you are interested in Windows Phone and stuff, ping me. And there's a closed Facebook group that I'm admin of.
Excellent. Where are you, Jeff?
I'm hanging out over at MacObserver.com. I'm also hanging out over at FreshBrewedTales.com and on Gobs Podcasts and on Twitter. I'm Jay Gamut. Same thing on Instagram. I'm easy to find.
You're everywhere, mate. If you're not on a podcast, then it doesn't exist.
That's my assumption.
Yeah. Where are you, Ian?
I'm at the usual place, at TIOABOA on Twitter. And eventually I might post something on there.
Go for it. And where are you, Camps?
I'm camping UK on Twitter and usually loitering somewhere in the Slack room. Posting out once a week on the available channels that we have in there, so keep an eye out.
Yeah, we got a few new ones that are in there. It's well worth doing. If you want to get in there, then all you got to do is send me an email to britishtechnetwork@gmail.com saying, little pig, let me in the Slack room. There's a few conditions, but yes, you will get in, no problem. And it's great fun. We've got quite a few in there, so enjoy. My name's Ian Rankin. You can get me at Ian Rankin on Twitter. We'll be back in next week on Thursday as normal, and everything should be back to normal then. So we'll have pre-show curry and all the normal stuff. No parents' evenings again in the bloody way. Have a good week. Thanks for listening.